Welcome back, and thanks for listening to the Coach's Playbook podcast. I've had a lot of coaches reach out about Coach Turner's student-athlete point scoring system, and if you're interested or you have any variation like it that you'd like to share, I'd love to hear from you. On today's episode, we have Coach Tim Riley, the boys basketball coach at Owensboro Catholic High School. Coach Riley has overachieved by every metric, and after working for him, he just has this way about him that makes everyone in the locker room believe you're going to win every game. Hope you enjoy. Today, we are joined by the head coach of the Owensboro Catholic High School Aces, Tim Riley. I was fortunate and blessed enough to work for Coach Riley for 1 year, and I probably learned more in that year than I could have in a decade at some other places. Coach Riley has won 10 regional championships and has won a state championship at Warren Central. This guy just knows how to win. Coach Riley, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Wyatt. Hey, I miss you, man. I miss you. Wish you'd come back.
You can't pay me enough.
Yeah, I know. You worked for free that year.
That's right.
You got a teaching job. Yep.
I took it. Yep. The public schools pay a little better, but I do miss it for sure. So, Coach, you took over a program that had never won a regional championship in school history, and had that that school had had a lot of good teams, has had some tremendous players through the course of the year, and now with two entirely different lineups, so it wasn't like you won it back-to-back with just one lineup. You've won two regional titles at Owensboro Catholic. You know, just what are one or two of the most important things that you think contributed to winning somewhere that just was not used to winning at that level before?
Well, I'd hate to go against anything. Timing factors into all this. You know, the timing of when I got here. When I got here, Apollo was considered the favorite to win the region easy. They had three college basketball players that left out after that year. And when that happened, it kind of opened up the whole region. I mean, we still weren't considered one of the better teams in the region. We were ranked 6th to 8th, but I had a really good sophomore class that first year. And then I had two senior guards that were really good basketball players. You know, not college, but one of them was a college basketball player if he wanted to at some level. But, you know, I had a good team that year. I mean, that first year we won it. But still with that, we weren't expected to win it. And so, and we started the year off that year 0-4 wide. Then things just started going in our direction. We started playing better. And by the end of the year, I did think we had the best team in the third region that year.
So, you know, like I remember that team and playing against that team, coaching against that team when they were like freshmen and some younger guys. And like you said, they were some good basketball players, but I think you probably got every ounce of everything out of those guys. And after an 0-4 start, how do you keep them? You know, I mean, it's hard to overcome sometimes a start like that. And, you know, what did it take? And, you know, you can, it's all right. I know you're a modest guy, but it's all right to go ahead and brag on yourself and, you know, kind of talk about, you know, what happened that allowed you guys to win at a high level and overachieve.
You know, sometimes it just takes one game. One game can create momentum if it's the right game. And we were 0-4 that year, and we went over and beat Apollo at Apollo, which was, you know, a rival, and won that game, then went to a Christmas tournament and won 3 out of 4 there, and then went to another Christmas tournament, won 3 out of 3, and all of a sudden now we're rolling. And so, you know, sometimes it just takes that one game. I do remember, this is a funny story. When we were 0-4, Max Reed was my sophomore point guard, or one of them, and he had a birthday. And so it was during finals week that first fall semester, and they bring a cookie cake in for him to eat with the team. His parents sent it in, and we had a crappy practice. And then the practice, I was like, I am not eating a cookie cake with you guys. Y'all are a big bunch of pouting babies because we're 0-4. We could have won all 4 of the games. I'm not eating this cake with y'all. Crap on y'all. And I just walked out. We come back the next day. We have a great practice. And the end of practice, the guys brought out some of the cookie cake. It was left over for me. And then went the next night, we won our first game. So I call that cookie gate, sort of Watergate. That was the moment that kind of got us going a little bit. So, And, you know, it's just getting somebody to believe in themselves. You know, like a lot of times when you get beat, you got to explain losses. Like, you got to explain losses to them.
Right.
This game could have easily went that away. Are we that much better if this game would have went that away? And so it's a constant trying to motivate, keep kids going, keep them, you know, thinking that they have a chance. And so, yeah, you got to do that if you want to try to win in this game.
Well, I think that's one thing that I learned a ton from you, but way more, you know, no offense. I don't think I run any of the baseline of bounds plays I stole from you. I don't run any of the offense you ran, but the things that are more important than those things are the things that I took away that I did think made you such a winner and made your teams win is they believed. And I didn't really understand the value at that time of, like, you kind of write your own narrative. And what I found out is if I'm not telling them, you know, why a game went a certain way, or if I'm not the one that's, well, someone is. And
yes,
it's probably not going to go in your favor because it's usually the coach's fault.
You know, I kind of think that I've always thought that I'm a good storyteller. And I think as a coach, you got to be able to tell stories and you got to be able to bring it all together. So I think you got to be a good storyteller if you're going to be a good coach and keep your kids together. And because it's a lot more than it's a people thing more than it is in a lot of ways, a basketball thing of trying to keep everybody together. Cause you know, everybody doesn't get to play the position they want to play. Everybody doesn't get the shots they want. You know, there's a lot of disappointments in the course of the season for everybody, and trying to keep everybody on the same, you know, going toward trying to win or get to the regional tournament and win a region. You just got to keep everybody trying to go in the right direction.
Yeah, sure. And, you know, the other thing that, that putting that belief into your kids, something that you do a ton of, you share a lot of articles with your kids. You watch a ton of film, but, I loved how, you know, you just kind of knew what, you just had a good beat on what the team needed at that time. And does that come with experience? You know, do you feel like you got better at that over the years, or, you know, were there ways that you went about learning to be better at that?
Yes. I mean, it took it over years, but I can remember even the first years I was a head coach that I stole articles all the time from magazines, newspapers. And I felt like the kids, when they got something that they read that somebody else said, it meant more than it just coming from me. And then I would try to apply that to our team, you know, that, I probably read more articles years ago than I even do now, but I still do. But the thing we have now is YouTube and we have the internet. And there's so much to be drawn from that. Just since we've been on break, I was watching the NBA channel, and I saw the 2010 NBA Finals. And then they had the back scenes of the 2010 NBA Finals. And there was a video where they were interviewing Phil Jackson, and Kobe was behind him. And they were in the locker room, and Kobe was doing pivots, working on his pivots. And so I paused it there and I filmed it and I sent it out, to some of our guys about the importance of fundamentals. Here, Kobe Bryant, who's considered one of the top 10 all-time basketball players, he's in there right before the NBA playoffs working on his pivots and how important that those small little things are to the game. Because you've got to convince them that they need to work on their footwork. You have to convince them. And I really believe it's better if I can get a buy-in than I make them do pivots. I just think that if I get a buy-in, they're going to do it better than they're going to do it if I just say we have to do it. If we don't do it, we're going to run. I want a buy-in from them. So I videoed that and I sent it out to, you know, some of our guys, like, look at the fundamental part of the game here with Kobe Bryant.
And do you think it's probably, you know, I feel like it's probably today more than ever important for you, the more positive and reaffirming echoes that they can hear of what you're teaching and what you're saying is huge, because, I mean, it seems like there's a trainer around every corner. There's, you know, there's somebody who, you know, was a Wendy's All-American or a, you know, a Burger King all something. And they all want to, you know, they all want to be a coach. And, you know, I feel like kids just are getting so much from so many different places that to hear, you know, to see people that they respect, to see the guys that they watch on TV doing the things that you're preaching, I think that probably goes a long way.
Yes. I mean, you've got it. They got a sense that you know what you're doing, and they got a sense that you care about who they are. They got to care, you know, have a sense that, you know, you like them and that their coach likes them. So all of that factors in, every bit of it. Does my coach like me? Does my coach care about me? Does he like me above and beyond basketball? And to me, I think all that factors into it. And to me, I wouldn't want to do it if those things weren't the case. Like, my favorite things now are is talking to guys that played for me in the past. And when you talk to them, there's no threat of, are they working on their game? Or are they going to make a shot for you? Now it's just a relationship you have with them. So, I mean, I don't want this just to be about basketball. I want there to be, you know, a relationship that develops out of it as well.
Just a little side note before we move on. You know, when I came to interview, I wanted to work for you. And, you know, of course, as a coach, and especially a young coach, you know, I was kind of, the first time I met you, kind of, you know, in awe, or just kind of, you know, like, man, you know, this guy's won, you know, at that time, like, you know, 10, you know, 9 regional championships, he won a state championship. Like, this is a legendary coach. And something you said early on, you know, you said these guys don't care what you've done before. Like, they probably don't even know.
No.
And it just, it kind of resonated with me at that time. Okay, I'm sitting here with a guy who's won a state championship and you know, and 9 regional championships, and he's telling me, you know, they don't care what you've done. It's, you know, this is, and they probably don't even know. And that really, it's absolutely true. And so you better not rest on what you've done to think that that's going to be the thing that gets kids to buy in.
Yeah, you know, initially it means something, but then after that, it's like, what are you going to do for me to make my experience of playing basketball more fun?
Right.
What are you going to do for me to help me be a little bit better basketball player? What are you going to do for, you know, that, and that's just all of us. We're, you know, and it should be fun. We should try to make it fun. That's, at the end of the day, if this thing ain't any fun, they're not going to play. The days of these guys just playing and fighting and battling, there's too much they can do that's fun,
mm-hmm,
than it was, you know, 30 years ago. There's too much stuff they can do that they enjoy doing. So when they're playing basketball, it needs to be fun if you can make it fun. But the most fun thing of all is winning. that's the most enjoyable thing.
I agree. Okay, so how do you treat big games? And is your preparation different or the same, you know, going into a district title game or going to a regional championship game? It just seems, you know, you've been able to win those big games over and over and over. So how do you attack that preparation, both from like a mental and, you know, and preparing them mentally and preparing them to go execute a plan and to go win a game?
You know, there's a lot of different things. One, I always want them to be loose, and I always want them to, I'm like, you've got to take the same shots that you've taken all year long. And you've got to make sure that when this game's over with, you don't feel like that you did not, you know, put something out there that the way that you play. So you've got to play the way we've played all year long. You got to take the same shots. You got to guard. You got to do everything that we've been doing, because it's, at the end of the day, it's a basketball game. And in big games, the team that gets back to the fact that it's a basketball game, the quickest, oftentimes gets an advantage. I mean, whether it's a regional final game, first round of the district, against your big rival, at the end of the day, it's a basketball game. And the team that makes it a basketball game the quickest is going to have the advantage. I like to give them permission to lose. You have my permission to lose. I mean, it will hurt, but it will not be the end of the world. I don't want them going out there feeling that stress that, man, we can't lose this game and put too much. Because at the end of the day, we're not fighting lions and tigers. It's not life and death. It's basketball. So I like to give them permission to lose the game. And then at times I like to make sure they're loosey-goosey. You know, like I played church league softball years ago, and this guy played double-A baseball and was a state champion high school baseball pitcher. And my name is Stan Mark, and we're getting ready to play a church league baseball game. And he said, all right, I want everybody to squat down and open up your butthole and loosen up. Church league softball game. And I'm like 20 years old, and I go, my gosh, that's the route. And, I mean, it's got to be loosey-goosey. And then I also, I have a great story that I tell about trying to talk to this beautiful girl at Western Kentucky when I was a student, and my voice cracked when I talked to her. And how, you know, it was like, and I tell that whole story to my kids, tell them that you can't want something too bad. Like, I wanted to talk to this girl too bad. And when my voice cracked, when I was talking to her, it was done. So I'm like, you cannot talk to the pretty girl if you want to talk to her too much. You can't win a basketball game if you want to win it too bad. There's got to be a little bit of, I'm going to do the best I can. And if that doesn't get it done, it just don't get done. And so I won't be loosey-goosey, but at the same time, you have to look at them in the eye and go, somebody's got to kick somebody's butt tonight. Somebody's got to rebound harder. Somebody's got to defend harder. You know, so, you know, you don't want it to be too loosey-goosey, but you want them to feel like, you know, it's a basketball game.
That's really good stuff. And something we were just talking the other day, and something you mentioned, and I wish we could have had this conversation about a month ago, because I think it's exactly what my team needed going to the regional finals. But you mentioned, you know, everybody is going to be, you know, everybody's going to be trying to motivate them, and everybody's going to be trying to throw, you know, whatever at them, at home and their fans and the people at school. And, you know, you said to me, they don't need any more motivation, right? Like, they just got to go, like, they're going to want to win as bad as So
if you got to motivate them to win a regional championship, you're in trouble right there. You don't have to there. There you got to get all the distractions out and get them focused in, and it's a basketball game. So, yeah, you know, Todd Webb, who you know well, and coached for me, and Todd won a state championship in Georgia this year. And Todd said, you know, he's at a private school, a lot of parental involvement, and all the parents are trying to motivate him and get them stuff. And he said the more they tried to motivate him, the more tighter his team got. And he went back to what I talked about it. Give them permission to lose a game. If you lose a game, your parents are going to love you most likely more than they'd love you if you even win the game. They're going to be nicer to you. My wife is nicer to me when we lose than we win. I can promise you, because then she feels bad for me. So I try to make sure they know that, you know, just play the basketball game and do the best you can, and whatever happens, happens.
That's good stuff. And yeah, that kind of stuff that goes into winning, that, you know, there, you don't pick this kind of stuff up at a coaching clinic very often. You know, these are kind of things that you can only learn by being around it or having somebody talk to you about it. So I hope a lot of people tune in, because this is a lot of really good stuff. Okay. Then kind of the next thing is a big thing, especially at our level. And it's I don't know that it's getting worse or better, but it's, you know, a lot of people, everybody has to deal with this. So let's talk about, you know, kind of handling parents. I don't even really want to say dealing with parents, because I think you set yourself up for a negative connotation and a negative experience. If you say, well, I have to deal with parents. Okay. Well, no, I'm working alongside parents. At the end of the day, we want the same thing. So, you know, how do you handle parents, and how do you try to get out in front of potential issues?
Well, you know, it's a lot easier to be a coach and a parent, work with parents after you've had children. Right? And so, honestly, I try to be a pro. You know, they're free to call me. I'll talk to them about their kids. I worry, concern myself with their kids. If their child's not doing very well, I will initiate contact with the parents when I have a concern about what's going on with basketball, because, you know, years ago I made a mistake. I applied for a job that I really wanted, and it was a good job in high school basketball in Kentucky. And everybody was telling that it was, the parents were way involved, and, you know, they were killing the coach and all this kind of stuff. And so I go up for the interview and I just like, man, I'm not, I blasted, you know, that it'd be my program and the parents, you know, blah, blah, blah. I think it cost me the job and cost me a chance to get hired as their coach. And I learned a lesson there. I mean, it's, we're dealing with these people's most valuable piece of property. My job is to be a pro. If it gets to the point where it cannot be a professional relationship with the parent, then you deal with that part of it. But I try to be a pro and I try to do what's right by their child. I try to remember that we're dealing with what I call their most valuable piece of property. And so I try to be a professional about it. And I mean, I'll talk about, if I think it needs to be added, I'll talk about playing time. But Brad Stevens said that, he, of course, in the NBA, he talks to adults. He ain't talking, might be talking to their agents, but he ain't talking to parents. But he said, if you want to talk about playing time, then, you know, then they got to be willing to take the honest, you know, this is the honest deal. And I'm lucky now. Why? Because of what you mentioned earlier, my success, it gives me a little more of a leeway than it does when I first got into coaching. When I first got into coaching, man, I didn't have a resume to back up what I was doing. And I had a lot of, I had some parent problems. I had a meet at the country club about me, about the, where the program was headed. So winning has helped solve a lot of that stuff. But I think it's important that you be a pro. And as long as the parent is professional, that, you know, you talk to them and, but you also talk to the kid. Sometimes you go see them. And if you could sense there's a problem, you try to beat it by going through the kid first. Because a lot of times they'll solve it when they go home.
Right. All right, let's talk about, you know, one thing I think all of my late game stuff I did steal from you. So I lied earlier, you know, my sideline end game, my full court end game plays I got from you. And the bigger thing that I took away, even necessarily than the actual play itself, was that, well, you better have a play. You know, I thought coaching, you know, I thought coaching was, you know, I call a timeout with 10 seconds, I draw up something on the board, they go do it, and I'm a genius. You know, like that's what I thought. And what I found was, you know, whatever I drew on the board, you know, in the most important moment of the game, I'm asking kids to go out there, perform what we just saw for the first time ever, get the timing right, you know, get everything just right, and make a tough shot from a spot they've never taken it from. And I think that was a fool's errand. So talk about your late game stuff and being prepared for anything.
In 2002, I went to my first state tournament. We're playing Louisville Mail. In the preseason, Louisville Mail was ranked nationally. And my Warren Central team was ranked sixth in the region. And we won our region. And we're playing them. We got the ball side out of bounds with 8 seconds to go and the score's tied. And we call a timeout. And I don't have a play. At that time, I didn't have a play. And we get off a shot, not a great shot. We get off a shot. And I said, from that point on, I'll always have something. And then after that, we've had the explosion of the internet and people that put stuff out there. And so I've watched a lot of stuff over the years. I picked up stuff that I think my team could run. And so I've got long plays. I've got side out of bounds plays. I've got I've got a lot of stuff that I've stolen that I use, and we do them in practice. And, you know, we don't have them in early in the year like we do late in the year, but late in the year, you know, I do not want to take the chance. I'm going to lose a game because we don't know how we're going to go the length of the floor with 5 seconds to go in the game. We don't know how we're going to go the length of the floor with 2 seconds to go in the game. Or we don't know what we're going to do if we got side out of bounds and there's only 1 second to go in the game. And you also have to be side out of bounds late in the game, whether they're going to play zone or main. Because it's a lot harder to run that side out of bounds play against zone, I think, than it is man. And so you got to be prepared for both of them now. I've stole all of it. I might put a little wrinkle to it, but I've stole all of it from somebody else.
You know,
and the best place to get them is the NBA guys. Because you think about how many times does the NBA guys have a side out of bounds play with 2 seconds on the clock or 3 seconds on the clock. And in high school, we only have that four times in a game. And in college, the same way. They have so many, you know, end of the clock situations because of the shot clock. So there's a lot to be stolen at our level if we want to steal it and have something.
Yeah, and one thing, even this kind of blew my mind, because at that time in my career, I definitely didn't consider this kind of stuff. But that year I was with you, we had a left-handed kid and a right-handed kid. And we would run our sideline out-of-bounds play for a three for whichever kid happened to be coming to their natural kind of 1-2 catch and shoot gather. And that year we hit a three. I mean, it was a bank in and it was ugly, but I mean, we hit a three.
Hit one.
Yep.
Yep. And he, it wasn't pretty. And but that kid hit that three, tied it up and celebrated and almost gave up a layup to cost us the game after that made basket. That was something else.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, it's like, you got to fit it all to your team now. You got to, you know, you got to fit every, and it might be the guy that you run it for is not your best scorer, but it's the guy you think that might have the best chance to get open and get a good look. So your best player might be your decoy in that situation.
Yeah, I think, and I think that's, it's huge that you're willing to, you know, let maybe, you know, I think everybody, if you ask most coaches, they always say, well, I want my best player shooting the shot at the end of the game. And yeah, that's an ideal situation. But, you know, I think at times we forget that you've got some other guys that are really good that it, you know, their open shot's going to be probably a lot better than this kid taking some really, really tough shot where they're all over him. And
taking two guys all over him.
Right.
One guy just not supposed to leave him and face guard him. And so it has to be who you think can get the best look. Yes,
and
I think.
Something else that you talked about that I had Coach Hayworth on as well, and he mentioned the same thing. So after hearing it from you two guys, I figured there's something to it. But one thing you mentioned is, you know, whatever you do decide on whatever side of the ball it is, you know, you just have to be able to live with whatever happens. And,
yes,
you know, that's – I think as a coach, I think you can beat yourself up. But I think that's a mental thing for us coaches that you have to have hardwired into you that – you know, I'm going to make a decision here, and but be confident about it, and don't second guess yourself, and you know, and just being able to live with whatever happens.
You got to be able to live with your mistakes. And it's hard now. I mean, because you know we won the region this year, but I beat myself up most of the year. I wasn't really happy with the job I did, but what happened was is we were fortunate at the end of the year we got it going, and but man. You know, in early February, I wasn't a very happy coach, wasn't very happy with my team, and most of all, wasn't very happy with myself. And so it's hard not to beat yourself up in this deal. Because one reason I think guys like you win and Tim Hayworth win is because you care. And, you know, you got to care. And when you care, you're hard on yourself. And I know that you guys are, you can sit there and say you got to live with it, but you're still hard on yourself.
Yeah, you know, there's about a million things I'd like to kind of keep going with, but we're running out of time. We got about 2 minutes left here. Just talk a little bit about, this hits home for me. Talk about balancing being a dad and coaching, cause you've been there, you've done that. Just, you know, real quickly in 2 minutes, talk about the finding that balance.
The coronavirus, has allowed me to go back and get my old VCRs at my family tapes of family tapes. And I came across one the other day where my son, when he was about a year old, was on top or 18 months old. No, he was probably 20 months old. And he's laying on top of one of my players who was over at my house. This was when I was at Caverna. And that kid died about 8 years ago in a car accident. And I sent it to his brother who was on my team. My kids have always been a part of my basketball team. From the time they grew up, they were around those guys. They've had so many big brothers. It's unbelievable. So they've just always been a part of it. My oldest two kids were boys and, they were a part of it. When I was at Warren Central, they were little guys and we'd have a huge game at home. I remember one time we were playing Bowling Green High School, which was our huge rival. And I came in the locker room at halftime and I had brought up one of those little tight goals, you know, that you have. And we come in the locker room and there's like 10 little kids in there playing basketball and they got a great game going, dunking and fighting and battling. I'm having to run kids out of my locker room so we can talk about where we're at halftime against, you know, Bowling Green High School Purples. And so I just always, they were just always a part of it. And, you know, I mean, I have pictures with my two boys and their two favorite players when they were little, and they're still friends with those two guys. One son moved to Louisville, and Ryan Cummings, who was his favorite player.
Coach, I hate to cut you off, but this thing's going to cut us off. So I appreciate you being on, and we'll get you back on.
Thanks for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed it. If you ever get to stop by Owensboro and take Coach Rye to lunch, I would definitely encourage it. It'll be worth your time. On Tuesday, we will have Belmont assistant coach Jamie Givens on, and it should be a good one. Until then, keep getting better.